Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joining us live in studio is the Apostolic Administrator for the Diocese of Buffalo, Bishop Edward Scharfenberger, joining us live. Thanks for joining us.
Morning. Great to be here. All those names right, too.
I was just going to say, Edward, this is our first time meeting face-to-face. What do you prefer?
Bishop Ed is actually what they know me as in Buffalo, so that's fine. And, you know, for the Catholic listeners out there, they know what that is. And it's kind of a title. It's an informal title that we use sometimes. So, yes, good to be here.
How are you settling into your role here in Buffalo, and how was your ride in this morning?
Well, first of all, my ride in, actually, I'm staying at Canisius College, so it wasn't too bad a ride, about 15 minutes. It was a straight ride down, you know, Main Street and then Maple Avenue and so forth. But not so bad, but, you know, there was ice on my windshield this morning, too, but I just kind of ignored it and kept going.
All right, so not a bad drive-in for you. Staying at Canisius, a lot of people wondering about your schedule, because while you're doing these duties here in Buffalo, you're still over in Albany, the Diocese of Albany, where you've been serving as bishop. Yeah. How are you splitting that time? Has it proven to be difficult over the last month?
I did promise one day a week, because I figured I better say exactly what I thought I could do, you know. So I took Monday as the day I usually take off. But so I've been coming at Sunday night, staying till Tuesday morning. That hasn't always worked out. So it's been an average of about 2 days a week. Of course, you know, thank God there's telephones and there's text and there's email. So I've been keeping in communication. It so happens I have a full week now, so I'm here a week. But I will be here every week, at least a day, maybe two. And so far, so good. Trouble is, there's no nonstop flights, and of course, it's a slow train. And I haven't driven yet, but it's so far so good. It's about, I get here in about 3 or 4 hours from Albany each way.
And are you finding your way around here, and are you kind of finding the role that you're playing here,
well,
too?
Well, you know, but I figure that the first thing to do when you're new on the block is to get to see and to know people. So that's what I'm doing. I'm doing a lot of listening. My general way of looking at it is I'm visiting a long-lost family, you know, like if you find out in your genealogy that you had a family in another state or something. So, yeah, I mean, there is a connection already. We are brothers and sisters in our faith. You know, we're fellow New Yorkers, you know. But I tell you, it's interesting. Buffalo, my first sense of being here was that it reminds you a little more of the Midwest. I hope I'm not insulting anybody by saying
that. I think
that
a lot of people say that.
Yeah. You know, and not only I don't know if you can hear my Brooklyn accent, because I'm originally from Brooklyn, but I'm eternally in search of a good pizza, though. And I have to tell you that you know, I haven't tried Buffalo pizza yet, but I don't want to say anything about Albany because I'll get in trouble. But I miss, you know, the pizza downstate. But I find, too, also there's a real friendliness. You know, I've heard some people refer to Buffalo as the city of brotherly love. And I said, well, that's Philadelphia. No, but they said we really claim that, too. And I do find a lot of that. Obviously, we're facing a lot of hurt, you know, because of recent events. The last year has been very tough in many ways. But so I am hearing that. But again, I see my mission here as trying to help heal a family.
Kind of looking at the, we were talking about the schedule, and by the way, Buffalo pizza, it's not the same as downstate pizza, but okay. We have our own style, and it's a lot better. So we'll give you the places to check out.
I think you'll
soon.
Come to love Buffalo pizza.
All right,
pizza.
And then you got to tell me how to get the best Buffalo wings, too. I was told not to talk about that or the Bills, but at any rate.
We'll talk plenty about that off the air, but looking at the schedule, looking at when you're not here, you mentioned, you know, calls and texts.
Right.
I think for a lot of people, they're wondering, what exactly is that role? And when you're not here, what are people here in the Diocese of Buffalo asking of you right now?
That's an excellent question. And what people are looking is to make connections. They're looking for healing. They're looking for, and I want to say this in not as a critique, you know, but they're looking to see what's going on. You know, tell us the truth. Help us to move forward. Help us to to heal the rifts that have taken place. You know, the scourge of really clerical abuse, which is quite frankly a form of incest, I'm sorry to say. You know, it's terrible when a family is plagued by this. However, there are many other hurts as well, too, because, you know, we live in a country which has a lot of fractures in it, too. You know, red states and blue states. So some of the political atmosphere, you know, which is in our, I hate to say it's in our blood, but it's all around us, can't help but affect families, church. I mean, nobody wants to talk about politics at the Thanksgiving dinner. Just don't bring up any political names or you'll have a fight, you know. So I'm trying to do what we can do as family and bring people together, help people to talk, help us to respect one another, and then open up any channels that may have seemed to have been clogged, you know. One of the questions I ask about is, and I'll bring it up, you know, what about files, secret files? You know, I've heard about that, and I've been trying to get a handle on really that and assure everybody that whoever needs to have any information they need to move forward, you know, if they have a story they need to tell that hasn't been heard, not to be afraid to come forward. I'm very concerned about people that suffer in silence, you know, and that could be for any number of things, not only sexual abuse, but domestic violence and, you know, things that really many times people don't want to talk about in their families. And I feel that we are a family and we have to be able to do that and to help one another to heal.
It sounds like you're trying to be as open as you can be. Have you had to meet with any investigators, like the DA's office or the FBI?
Sure. One of the first things I did was actually to call up John Flynn, and I spoke with the DA, and I asked him, I said, you know, give me a little help if you can. I'd like to take a review of our files. I don't want there to be anything that is not, you know, available to scrutiny, and certainly if there's any evidence that things were not handled correctly, I want to know about that. And he said, sure, we'll help. And I've also spoken with our own investigators here in Buffalo. We have, you know, there are some ongoing, for want of a better word, cases. And, you know, I've certainly been in touch with that. I've also been speaking with some survivors of sexual abuse as well, too. Affording them confidentiality, but an opportunity to be heard. I do get some correspondence that I'm trying to respond to as well. So, and I've also been trying to get around to some of our local parishes. Yesterday, I celebrated 10 o'clock Mass at St. Gabriel's in Elma, I think it is. And they when I walked in there, the lights were all out. I think some people experienced some blackouts, I think. And so we had a generator helping. And then right after the communion, the lights came on. So I got to meet one of the larger parishes in the diocese. And in the afternoon, I was at the cathedral for the first time and met with the members of the Diocesan Pastoral Council and the Bishop's Commission. So we had a wonderful, wonderful gathering.
Joining us live in studio, the Apostolic Administrator for the Diocese of Buffalo, it's Bishop Edward Scharfenberger, joining us live this morning.
Good morning.
One of the things that kind of struck me, and, you know, we're not here throughout the hour to besmirch the former administration or former bishops here, but you came in studio. You were by yourself. You drove yourself here. And, you know, we're used to, we've had the former bishop in here, kind of an entourage following, you know, a driver with a car where, you know, you're in the back seat, you're going through a back entrance and kind of this whole ordeal surrounding an arrival. But with you, it's a lot more casual. And I'm wondering how important it might be to you, given everything that we've seen here in Buffalo, to maybe take that position of bishop off of the pedestal a little bit, to make it a little bit more approachable than it was in the past.
That's interesting, because this is pretty much me. You know, I'm a Brooklyn native, and, let me just put it in these terms, and I've told this story before, too. My grandfather used to cut my hair. He was a small business, you know, and in many ways a self-made man. His father had died when he was young. He had to kind of drive the milk wagon, and he was actually the one that put his older brother through the seminary. And sometimes I even wonder whether my grandfather wasn't moving that direction. At any rate, he had this thing about a uniform. I wanted to be a scout, I remember, you know, and he kind of didn't talk me out of that. But he said, you know, the uniform isn't really what it's about. And he said, and listen to this, he said to me, remember, the Pope has to put his pants on every morning like everybody else, one leg at a time. And yet, and this is my grandfather's kind of informality, which I think I inherit a little bit of, but it wasn't the lack of respect for the office. I mean, he was a good Catholic. He was an usher in his church. As a matter of fact, his specialty, believe it or not, get this, was outfitting bishops. In other words, they would come when they got to be bishops. They would come to Eddie Scharfenberger, and he would be the one that would make the crozier, you know, that pastoral staff, mm-hmm. you know, which is kind of symbolic of the bishop's shepherding role. Now, to your point, Alan, a bishop has to be a good shepherd to his sheep, and a shepherd has to be close to the sheep. And, you know, you've heard Pope Francis talk about he has to acquire the smell of the sheep even. You know, in other words, because if you ever see these, if you ever get to go, you know, where they have sheep and shepherds, you will see that, you know, the shepherd will be standing there and the sheep will sort of gather around the feet of the shepherd. It almost looks like you can't tell the difference between the sheep and the shepherd, except he's the one that's leading them and protecting them. But at the same time, close to them and not in an overbearing or intimidating sort of way. So I'm not saying bishops are intimidating, but to tell you the truth, sometimes when they hear my title, you know, people don't know how to address me, you know, or they're supposed to kiss something or, you know, and I always just say, no, call me Bishop Ed. You know, I see myself as, let's just see, like maybe like a little grandpa coming in now to try to help my family, you know, but that's what comes from my heart. That's the way I actually feel. I want people to feel at peace. I want to help people to do what they do well. I love to hear stories. You know, what's going on in your life? Where are you from? What do you like? What drew you to this? I won't interview you today, but, you know, it does fascinate me what drew you to where you are, too. You know, the things went on in your life. And so primarily I'm here to listen. So if I'm going to be able to do that, I have to do less of the talking and more of the just showing up.
Well, right. You know, this is refreshing to so many people around here to see this, yeah. But it does. It sounds to me that this is the way you operated in Albany as well. You're not doing
That's my roots. That's the way I am. And I think it's the best way for us to work together, you know. And because it's not just what you say in a press release. You know, I mean, we can make headlines. And if you want to ask me a big one, I can certainly, you know, field it. But I want to create more of an atmosphere of openness and of dialogue. We used to say that a lot when I was growing up in the 60s after the counts. Conversation. Mm-hmm. Our conversations are very important. And everybody has a story. And, you know, even if you look at the Bible, you know, I don't know, you know, everybody comes in different faith traditions, but there's a lot of stories in there, a lot of accounts, a lot of narratives, you know, and that's what really helps grow faith as well, too. And it's not just the good things, you know, it's the struggles that we have. And it's the questions that we have. What's my life all about? Where am I going? Does anybody care? You know, what about loving? How do I love? What's a good way? We all know love is a funny word, you know, and people ask me all the time about issues, you know, like, marriage, you know, a church has a strong stand, you know, it's not just us as a Catholic church, but in the importance of those fundamental relationships, family, friends, marriage, and how do we be good parents to our children? How do we be good parents to ourselves? So, what am I saying? It's all about relationship.
Wondering if you've been given any guidance. You know, we heard a lot from you when all of this first happened, first day,
yes.
And things were kind of crazy,
yes.
With how fast they moved. But
yes.
In maybe the month since, if you've had any discussions about how long you're expected to stay in this role here in Buffalo.
Yes, I don't know. I will tell you that the Apostolic Nuncio, who was in Washington, as you know, he's the Pope's official representative. And I have had conversations with him. And I was also with him in Phoenix, Arizona, where I didn't know he was going to be there. He didn't know I was going to be there. But it was a gathering of young people who minister to young people on campus. Focus is the name. And I had an opportunity to chat with him. And he came up to me, you know, Archbishop Christophe Pierre is his name. He's French background. And he said, well, how long do you think you should stay? So it was interesting because he was very, you know, open about that. And I said, well, I'll stay as long as you need. But, you know, I think the sooner the better to appoint, you know, the permanent successor. So, you know, so... And he said, well, when, you know, and I said, well, maybe announce it by Easter would be good. You know, that's a good transition point. But so, OK. But no, he I say this somewhat jokingly, but I know that the Holy See wants to move quickly on this.
So, is there any chance that you could be named the permanent bishop?
Historically, there is a chance. You know, I'm not lobbying. I am not, you know, I'm keeping open to all possibilities. I have to tell you, if they hear this in Albany, I might get into trouble. I love Albany, you know, and my intent, my hope was to remain as their spiritual father. But, you know, every bishop has to be open to helping out, you know, it's the folks down the block, so to speak, mm-hmm. like sometimes we all do. So, and I do see my role as temporary, you know, and when we get things kind of like in a better place, people have a little more confidence, a little more hope that we've, you know, made some movement to open up conversation, as I say, then hopefully that would be a good opportunity for Bishop Malone's successor to be able to come in. I have no idea who that might be. You know, I'm sure they are looking for individual people. Whether my name is on that list, I don't know. Because don't forget, if I leave Albany, then they have to put somebody in Albany. So I don't think that would be the first impulse right. to do that. But I just have to see what happens. I have no idea.
You kind of mentioned that we're like an arm's reach away from Albany, so to speak, down the block.
Yes, no.
Not too far away where you wouldn't, you know, understand what was going on here in
right.
Buffalo before
oh, sure.
you came over here.
Exactly.
I'm wondering, you know, being from Albany, if that,
yes.
you know, maybe lack of confidence in the church that had been growing over the past couple of years here in Buffalo,
sure.
if you were feeling... ripple effects of that at all over in Albany where
Very
you
good
were,
question.
Or you know, if that was really reaching you and other areas of the
Very
church.
Very good question, but no, there's no question. And you know, we do talk to one another. Obviously, the bishops do. You know, and we do. We're all in a what we call a province, an ecclesiastical province. So, and you know, we do have conversation, of course. And yes, you know, much of what I would hear would be through my communications director. Mary Poust, you know, and we would, you know, hear these stories and were being reported and, you know, and it sounded awful, you know, really. But there's not much you can do, you know, other than talk, pray, listen. So, yes, I was very much aware. Would it have a ripple effect? Well, you know, people have the same sort of questions. You know, what are we doing to heal these things? What are we doing to... So I've taken a very... let me just put it this way. As I said earlier, I hate seeing people suffer in silence. And I hate, you know, when... That's maybe too strong a word, but it's not good for any of us in a family. When I see... Families don't have to pick at one another. You know, and it comes to a point that somebody has to take a picket sign outside of their brother or sister's house because they don't feel they're welcome or because they don't feel there's conversation going on. That's disturbing, and particularly in a church that's all about healing, bringing people, reconciling. You know, we're not about this is another question, too, I get. You know, when are you going to start purging? You know, I said, what do you mean by that? That sounds, you know, horrible. You know, getting rid of certain people. And I said, no, we're not in the business of condemning, throwing people out. We're in the business of healing. And if some people feel they're not included, they're not welcome, then I want to find out, how do you bring them to the table?
It's a bad analogy to make, but yeah. Do you find that a lot of people look at this almost as if it's like a sports team? So
sure.
the Sabres or Bills are doing bad, and somebody says, you know what, they just need to clean house. Get them all out. You know, I don't care if one person's doing a good job. They're all part of this regime, and so we need a total change.
Right.
Do people think maybe the same way?
Oh, sure. And that's natural, I think, too. You know, we've all heard, you know, a rotten apple in the barrel, you know, makes all of them. And there are times when, to be honest, you know, there are toxic patterns of behavior associated with certain individuals, and that person just can't be there in the team, at least not for a while, you know. But and there's no question that the sports analogies, the political analogies. But first of all, that may come, you know. But I've often find it sometimes. If you set a vision, if you set a clear path, sometimes people will self-remove, if I could put it that way, or because they don't feel they can get with the program, they'll say, "I really don't belong here. I need to go someplace else," you know. And that does happen at times. I've seen that in my own, you know, history in Brooklyn and in Albany. Sometimes people do say they don't share, you know, the vision that we're going. So they say, maybe I belong someplace else. But not to be completely cast off. Sometimes families don't get along. You know, the cuisine, you know, you get together maybe for the holidays, but, you know, you're not really too. And that happens, unfortunately, but it's a reality. But I also like to look for ask the question, what is it that makes you feel you don't belong here or things are not right? And then maybe you could be part of the solution.
Bishop Ed, as he likes
to
be called.
Good morning, yes.
Bishop Edward Scharfenberger in our studio this morning, drove himself here under these conditions that we're all dealing with this morning. But let me get right to one of the bigger matters we want to talk about. You arrived under this cloud of bankruptcy for the Buffalo Diocese. Mm-hmm. Are you any closer to making a decision
on
that?
Oh, yes. That will come soon. And it is likely, but let me put it in perspective. You know, bankruptcy means you're running out of money, and you need to help to try to get your focus so that you can focus on what is essential. You know, and in the bankruptcy process, there is some whittling down, and of course, that's very frightening because people might lose jobs, and because it might mean certain positions may have to change, and that all of that. Now, that you don't need a bankruptcy proceeding to do that. I mean, every organization has to look at is it balancing its budget and what is essential, what is not. So, you know, there's no reason why we should not be doing that ourselves. Question is, are we at a point where we're running so much in the red that we need to actually use that Chapter 11 kind of to help us to get that focus? And that's what we're debating right now. But the goal, and this is what I'd like to say, is that, you know, yeah, there's a specter of bankruptcy, but bankruptcy is a tool, a means to an end. And the end has to be focusing on what our mission is. Every organization has to have a mission. We're in the mission of evangelization. And that by that I mean gospel and bringing the good news that I believe comes from God's presence in our lives through Jesus Christ. And that is a healing mission. That is a mission of hope. You know, the very first thing that Jesus says, I've come, he quotes Isaiah, I've come to free prisoners, you know, and to bring captives joy and those in sorrow joy, and to bring good news to the poor. I often say, how do you know I'm a gospel person? You know, I ask people this question. I ask myself that question. And the question I really have is, are you good news or bad news? You know, I mean, everybody can say that if you're not a Christian or a Catholic, you know, am I good news or bad news to the world? When people see me, do they go, mm-hmm. you know, he just walked into the room? Or do I present an image of hope and love? And I'm not talking about covering up, you know, things that are not right. But am I a person that brings joy, that brings, Pope Francis talks about that all the time. So I would like to see Chapter 11, bankruptcy, not as a downer, but as an opportunity to maybe whittle away what doesn't belong there. And I don't mean that so much as people, so much as attitudes and ways of doing things, you know, system, organization. You know, change is any bureaucracy. And let's face it, any organization develops those tendencies is very threatening because people feel, oh, you know, what happens to me? So I don't want anybody to feel left out. But I think we do our work best when we know what our mission is, what we're commissioned to do, and when we're working with one another. So it's a you speak of Chapter 11 reorganization, restructuring. I would hope that it would help us bring about a restructuring of our relationships, the way we do things, and to do it better.
A lot of people look at bankruptcy, though, especially in this case, as maybe a way to hold back some information, as somewhat of a protection for people who might have been asked in cases to testify, and they see bankruptcy. How can, you know, bankruptcy, excellent. We're hearing these reports of hundreds of thousands of dollars fixing up, you know, old places.
Excellent question, Brian, and that's exactly that. You know what? That was really my second point. My first was it should be about mission, but actually more important even than that, is that I'm concerned about the effect this has on survivors and victims of sexual abuse, particularly those that may have filed through the CVA, you know, the Child Victims Act, may have a case. And it is true. Once a bankruptcy proceeding is filed, it stops the discovery process. So will that silence the voice of victims? And I say, no, first of all, it doesn't. It does stop that particular process, which, of course, you know, legislators of New York State, you know, made available. And I certainly encourage anybody that wants to pursue that process, fine. But we have to remember that 80% of all victims of sexual abuse are not those that will have an association with an institution like the church or the scouts or the public schools, but actually 80% of it happens in homes, you know, and, you know, among familiars, fathers, mothers, sisters, brothers. And where's their voice? They can't find, you know, they won't get an attorney's firm to represent them because nobody wants to sue their uncle, you know. We have actually an open door for that. Anybody that has experienced that, we actually have a protocol, a procedure, call it what you will, where somebody can come forward. We have an assistance coordinator that will help them to tell their story confidentially to be heard. And if it is, this is, now let me just shift another thing quickly. There is always a possibility that in the legal realm, that a windfall lawsuit, somebody may perhaps sue, and the outcome may be a large amount of assets will be transferred to that person who won the lawsuit. But that could also deprive others of some of the pie. What the bankruptcy proceeding does is it finds out what actually are the assets of a corporation. So let's say you have, I don't know how many people, you know, who might be interested in getting some assistance from that. Let's say you have 100 or 200 people. In a Chapter 11 proceeding, there will be some sort of a process by which everyone will get a fair share of what is available. You know, like they did with the World Trade Center with Justice Feinberg, for example, mm-hmm. who actually, you know, it's not easy to do, but was actually to find a way of saying, look, these are funds that are available, but everybody should be able to have some part of it. So it really, in the long run, at least my hope is, will not freeze victim survivors out.
Is that an ongoing commitment from you and as you're working here to, as the bankruptcy proceeding goes forward, to remain open and say, you know, if this would have went another way, you know, this is the information that would have been shared publicly.
Yes, absolutely. That is definitely a tone that I'm setting, and I'm doing everything I possibly can to be sure that that continues.
Bishop Ed Scharfenberger is here from he's the apostolic administrator for the Buffalo Diocese. And, you know, Bishop John Hurley with the Movement to Restore Trust, he's been outspoken on the changes that need to be made here. He's concerned about collateral damage to innocent priests in the diocese. Have you been able to meet with some of them and bring about the healing that you're talking about?
Yes, that's very important that, you know, unfortunately, we live in a time when sometimes an individual from a certain profession, and in this case, clergy, but it could also be lawyers or doctors or anybody, you know, really fouls up. And it leaves kind of a mark on the entire profession, you know. And I know priests are feeling that very deeply. One of the first things I did the very first day I got here was to welcome a conference call for all clergy, you know, and just to let them speak, you know. And I am, it is on my mind. One of the things that we have done in Albany is I have asked specifically a colleague of mine, a priest, who has extensive experience in the military as well, too, to be able to keep touch of those who in some way may even have been involved in abuse situations themselves, you know, to be sure that they are given the kind of guidance and direction and discipline that is needed. But I think your question, Susan, was more toward those who, you know, are not involved in any way directly, you know, but are feeling the collateral damages, as John Hurley points out. And I think that, you know, just strengthening the fraternity, you know, is the way to do that, you know, through prayer, through conversation, And I'm going out to the seminary today. Now, it's a board meeting, but I also am concerned about the seminarians, too, that are preparing for priesthood, too. And I'm in touch with a few of them, actually. And one newly ordained priest who I met yesterday said, can I talk to you? So I make myself available, but I also encourage priests to, and the bishops are the worst examples of it. We're kind of lone wolves, We suffer in silence as well as anybody else, And people, for example, like who are going through a divorce, often feel isolated. Who wants to talk to me? I'm the odd man or odd woman out. And it's important to have support groups, people that can come together and kind of, because really we can do, I think, even when we're wounded, as long as we realize we're not alone and that we can walk with one another. And I think that really goes a long way. I always try to say guilt by association can be a very, very damaging sort of thing. And I like to not see people as being a part of that group, the Catholic Church or the lawyers or that medical group, you name it. But see every person as a child of God, as an individual. God loves all of us, even those of us that are sinners. There's a few, right? And that, really, who of us can say we have not sinned? And try to meet every person and respect that person as they are. That's part of our pro-life ethic, that we regard the dignity of every human person from the time of conception to natural death, regardless of their status, regardless of what country they're in, regardless of even whether they're, quote, legal or illegal, or, young or old, well or unwell, that every human being is entitled to respect and the dignity. And the more we can promote that and live it in our own lives, the less we have to be concerned about these stigmas, because somebody may have been associated with the person. As I said, some people, have been asking that question, when you're going to purge, when you're going to get rid of. Just because somebody worked with somebody doesn't mean they agreed mm-hmm. with everything they did.
Let me ask you about something. Celibacy and married priests.
Yeah.
Pope Benedict just out with a new book.
I saw in Cardinal Seurat, I think, was it also, they collaborated, I think, on that.
Yes. Anyway, he's reaffirming the value of celibacy.
Yes.
This is coming at a time when Pope Francis could be making a decision about yeah. whether to allow married priests to, enter dioceses around the world.
There's always been married priests and there's always been unmarried priests. And celibacy really means unmarried,
Right.
The other thing that I think is often lost in this is that priests that are celibate are more than just unmarried. They're also chaste. They're living lives that are essentially equivalent in some ways, parallel to the life of married people. In other words, you're faithful in marriage to that one person. And a priest who is lives, celibately, also has to live chastely. In other words, live as if he were married. In a way, I see myself, I can only speak my own experience here, as a father of a larger family. And there is a beauty in that type of love. There's many ways of loving. Love is a funny word. What does it mean? Chaste celibacy is another way of loving. Sort of like when you're dedicated to one person, you are, that shows sort of the depth of love. You're completely faithful, and you fight off temptations, to stray. You ask for God's help because you can't do it without God's help. When you are following a celibate way of life, you also must be chaste too. A married man or woman have to be chaste with everybody but their own. And you have to be chaste in your own marriage because you can't abuse that, that gift of love, You have to be sensitive to the other person's needs and desires. And, you don't own the other person. It's another human being. Well, the same thing is true with the person that gives his life to, the shepherd and the sheep, basically. You give your life to your family. So I see my spiritual sons and daughters as my family. I see the church as my spouse. And I haven't read, the book yet that the Pope and the Cardinal put out, but I'm sure that's what they'd speak of. Now, to Pope Francis's point, he has raised the issue, the possibility of what he calls, this is Latin, viri probati. In other words, maybe older men who perhaps have had families and may still remain married, but in areas where there is a shortage of priests, to look at the possibility of ordaining them as simple clergymen who can hear confessions, say Mass, visit people, and so forth. And that's really not a new idea, because remember, Peter was married, he had a family, and but it very pretty early on, you know, the tradition, Christ himself was celibate, was unmarried, and this was seen as a good way for a priest to dedicate himself entirely to a spiritual family. As you know, also, men and women religious, you know, sisters, have also taken on living in communion, celibately, without being married, again, dedicating their entire life to prayer or to some service. So it's these themes have run throughout church history. Actually, they precede Christianity, too. There were groups of monks and religious communities in the Jewish tradition, even, at least temporarily, the Essenes, for example, at the time of Christ. So it's another way of loving, and I think what Pope Francis and Cardinal Sarah would be saying is that it's okay not to always be in a relationship with one other person, that it is also possible to be a whole person and to give yourself in love to some cause, some goal, some ideal, some community, and it is another way of loving.
That's a hot button issue, especially this morning in the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. Want to one more question on what's going on here locally? We did talk a lot about your maybe a new outlook on how you kind of want to lead amongst the flock, so to speak, and also this idea that some people want a, you know, quote unquote purge of what's going on in the diocese. I'm wondering if you've faced any pushback of people here in Buffalo who might be, you know, we have a strong Catholic tradition here in Buffalo and a lot of what I would call old school, you know, thinking well, priests and bishops should be on that pedestal.
Yes.
I'm wondering if there is any pushback to your style and maybe how it's a little more welcoming might be the wrong word, but how you do like to lead amongst the flock, if anyone has an issue with that.
Well, I'm sure that what would motivate someone or anyone, you know, to, as you say, Brian, maybe to push back would be perhaps concerns, maybe even fears that something that I might be saying or doing would be being harmful in some way to them or to others, you know. And I don't want to harm or hurt anyone. As I say, I want everyone to feel that they have a place at the table. But we don't all have the same roles. You know, even in a family, you know, the roles of a husband and a wife, the roles of children, where do grandparents fit in? Where do extended family fit in? You know, these are the types of tensions that happen in every family, you know, let's say the in-laws and the outlaws, right? So I'm not trying to say that people that would oppose me are outlaws. That's what I'm saying. But I'm saying it is possible that, you know, everybody wants to be heard. Everybody wants to be included. And I don't want anybody to feel that. Yeah, there's no question that there is a priest, a bishop, is in a position of authority. You know, when I call somebody up and say, I want to talk to you, that could be terrifying because somebody could say, he has the power to move me around or to remove me, you know.
Right.
And I'm conscious of that. And but at the same time, see, that so that type of authority is not the thing you want to encourage. But to see me as somebody who is trustworthy, who can be relied upon, who will set standards, who will set articulate the mission. Yes, we don't want to lose that. And even though my style may be informal, you know, I don't think there's any doubt that I'm here as, you know, as the spiritual father, and that some of the decisions I'm making will have some impact in people's lives. And I accept that responsibility. But I also want to do it in a consultative way so that everyone feels they can be heard. So if you have questions about my style or the way I'm doing things, come forward. Let me know. You know, how am I doing? I could put it that way. How am I not doing? So I really want everyone to feel that they can speak. And I will try to respond as best I can.
We are really happy that you could spend an hour with us.
Oh,
thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks.
You're welcome back at any time.
Thank you.
Have a safe drive back.
I will. I'll go a little slower than I drove in. Yeah, I promise. Okay.
Right. That's Bishop Edward Scharfenberger who joined us live in studio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.